are going to be treated in a way that certainly doesn't address their problem, but also exacerbates challenges that a community or an individual face to begin with. The job of actually addressing drug use and what underlies drug use in this society is hard work. And Measure 110 and the ways in which it will bring resources and a new way of thinking to how we address addiction in this state and hopefully nationally, I think that's the first step. I'm looking forward to us actually starting the hard work of addressing problematic drug use and not just avoiding it the way we have over the last 50 years.
Andy, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate the work you do.
Thank you, Nat. It's my pleasure.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Digital. Digital indigenous, founded by museum walls, concrete border brick, sharpened plaza malls on that vision quest. It's a brown bottle, tall white mouth, and it burns the spirit, sounds of voices I can't hear it. Music keeps the mind coherent, I inherit everything, stereotype, smoking on that peace pipe. Government, we ought to fight, they want to know my blood type. Some things change, some the same. I kept my cool, no way, I maintain. We won't stop till we break these chains. Break these chains, to the touch they feel cold. Thinking back on history, everything we're told. We became the wicked red men, tombstone red unknown. Electric Indians, neon when I glow. I will not stop, will not call this home. My rock is something different, running through life's catadrome. Oh yeah, we're electric, voltage high, it's blown. We resist it like the ohm. I charge my flow, my current soul. So electric, neon when I glow. I-M-I-N-D-I-A-N, electric Indians. Leaves turn red, they fall back down. The soil claims us all, fueled by this thing called change. Silly, but it's not so strange. Electric Indians, neon when I glow.
You're listening to Rose City Native Radio, Low Res Edition. Stay tuned for music, history, and more on today's show.
Woo! never changes. It's like waking up to yesterday with that same old again, eating up today. Those days I'm running faster than time, tracing myself through the thoughts in my mind. Ask the Great Spirit, who gave God life to give to all living things. Ask the Great Spirit what matters in the dimension of matter. Who owns what? If nothing is owned, who forgot their spirit? And where did they go? Those days of running faster than time,
now this the version. No Indian come from India, a true native mommy come from Arizona. Original land, Lord, that we claim. You tell your most natives, they're not the same. No Indian come from India, a true native mommy come from Arizona. Original land, Lord, that we claim. You tell your most natives, they're not the same. Me remember being young, a small Pekani. Me come to Hopi land to visit my granddaddy. Still living in the village of them Kekots Movi. To me, but to you a Sankey. A Sun Clan people come from Palaka, located in the area of First Mesa. He used to talk about the troubles in society, the economic problems with this democracy. No Indian come from India, a true native mommy come from Arizona. Original land, Lord, that we claim. Tell your most natives, them not the same. No Indian come from India, a true native mommy come from Arizona. Original land, Lord, that we claim. I'm not the same. On a mango tree, who made the mountains, who parted the sea? Ja, the time is now, me come to seek Ja Ja Man. They say he sent to us his only begotten son, the Lion of Ajuta, he come once again. This has been written from beginning to end. You must take heed and listen to words I speak. Satan is here to inherit the weak. No Indian come from India, a true native mommy come from Arizona. Original land, Lord, that me claim. You tell your most natives, them not the same. No Indian come from India, a true native mommy.
mommy come from Arizona. Original land, bird that we claim. We tell you most natives we're not the same. We're not the same.
We are the human beings. We come from the earth, the metals, minerals, and waters of the earth are our bone, flesh, and blood. We are the children of earth, human. We come from the sky. We are the children of the stars, the moon, the sun, the light, being, human being. The people, we are borrowing the present from the future and from the past. This borrowing is our responsibility, our purpose. In our living evolution, this changing of season, a time for gathering thoughts and goodness, the power of living in all our relations.
Because if you didn't know, then now you know. We're storytellers, reincarnated energies, respectively, term earth dwellers. We about them past lives with their fast lives, to the ancestors who have passed pipes, and everything in between. A human being connected to that life.
Brothers and sisters, gather your feather, gather your feather.
Had to grow from an infant to get to know him.
centuries. Our identities, avenger, dog givers of a blessed penalty. The epitome of genocidal history. So it's symmetry, it's built to be through a getting low self-esteem. But we know it's up to be spirit beings. Shit, the surface will melt the middle and delve into your dreams. If we honor with gifts, it'll give us strength to be seen. We can hype the whole scene like a microphone theme. We just blowing red rage against the machine. Controlling the angst that's trapped in between the spirit world and the laptop screen. As we rap on the track, why won't pet bots put your wax in the back when the mob hats off to the team? We are not only apathetic, we are fully energetic, wholly interconnected, kinetic. You set up prophetic like a Cessna set up, a poetic with our genetics. Your brothers and sisters, let's get it. A better world for me, youth, elders, animals. Wider than land is where we headed. Ay.
It's where we headed, y'all. It's where we headed, ay. It's where we headed, y'all. It's where we headed, ay. It's where we headed, y'all. It's where we headed, ay.
If you don't know, now you know.
Brothers and sisters,
gather your feathers.
Gather your feathers.
Brothers and sisters,
brothers and sisters,
gather your feathers,
gather your feathers.
We about to fly, oh, we about to fly, high, high.
Together, reintwining together, because in this bind it should never feel like we were blinded forever. We shouldn't mind it together, alignment is better. Whether or not we're lost in this void, we'll find it together. We've weathered this weather, because if you didn't know, then now you know. We're storytellers, reincarnated energies, respectively turn earth dwellers. We about them past lives, with their fast lives, to the ancestors who are past pipes, and everything in between, a human being connected to that life.
committed genocide. They don't feel the land, they kill the land. Try to kill the Indian and save the man. Send the slaughter, they poison water from Flint, Michigan to stand and rock. The land is high, the land is hurt. I feel it too, I'm from the earth. My flesh and blood, the color of the dirt. I'm blessed enough to love my mother first. Talking mother earth, Ujimaha, La Jota, my kosha, ah, Washa, yeah, give it strength. Hair like the land and it grow at length. Well, peace, yeah, they could. Our grandparents brave. Took them to that boarding school where our grandparents stayed. Cut them off from the ways that their grandparents prayed. They're trying to build these timelines over my grandparents' grave. There ain't no stopping this red light from blinding us. Ain't no stopping these problems from finding us. It's like I run with nowhere to go. My nation is a rosebud with nowhere to grow.
My people come from the land.
We're now going to take a second to take a look back in history. We are going to be looking at the Indian Relocation Act and hear the voices of those who were affected by it. Enjoy.
And the relocation program was in the beginning a totally voluntary program where if you agreed to get some training and leave the reservation, the Bureau would assist you for up to 6 months sometimes with basic needs until you became established in a large urban environment.
So they had these 11 pieces of legislation that was going to terminate all of our tribal status and take our land, and then they would have all of our tribal resources as well.
They felt like as long as they stayed on the reservation, the Bureau of Indian Affairs was going to continue to be oppressive of them. So you had some liberal Democrats who sort of had that feeling. On the other hand, you had some conservative Republicans who wanted Indians off the reservation so they could have access to Indian natural resources. So it was sort of a mixed bag.
Well, I think they used multiple arguments, and the one that seems to pop up most often in the literature is that if you leave the reservation and move to a city, first of all, we'll find a job for you. We'll find financial, aid that will help you make the transition. More importantly, you'll be out from under the oppressive thumb of the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
The Relocation Act was primarily to assimilate and acculturate the indigenous peoples of the United States.
And yet once they arrived, they discovered very quickly that the amount of support that the Bureau said it was going to provide really fell far short of what they actually needed to make the transition. And they discovered very quickly that the discrimination that they faced on the reservation, they were now facing in the urban area. But in a lot of other communities, if you leave the reservation, and if you've been gone for more than 6 months, you're no longer recognized by the tribal government. And when you look at the services that the federal government is supposed to provide to American Indians, the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the Indian Health Service, the two leading agencies, they have very restrictive policies and don't provide many services at all to urban Indians. And I think that's an absolute violation of the treaty rights that we enjoy.
Hey,
The Relocation Act has brought a lot of programs for Native peoples in into the big city. AIM is probably one of the organizational offshoots of the Relocation Act, unintentional, of course.
But the fact that you had multiple tribes, all of whom were being victimized by police brutality, discriminatory practices, and so on, I think that really led to the creation of this, what one sociologist calls a supra-tribal identity.
They had many different ways that they wanted to use to get rid of Indians, and the relocation program was one of them. And I guess from their point of view, it was very effective because they got thousands of Indian people to leave the reservation.
I believe that you're indigenous no matter where you are, if you maintain a clear connection to your homeland, see?
Now they've got focuses. They do go back to the reservation, and they become attorneys and tribal judges and doctors, physicians.
When multiple tribes gather together, they essentially create a new culture, a new identity. And yet only a handful of tribes today officially recognize their citizens who actually live in urban areas. And the urbanization of our peoples is stronger now than it has ever been. Some 60% of American Indians live in urban areas. And I think the very definition of what does it mean to be indigenous is being changed right now.
Three large movements of Indians. The first one being in 1830, when they had, the policy or removal act, the law. The government passed the law, and they moved all the Indians east of the Mississippi to the west. And that was all kinds of upheavals. And that's when the Indian Territory was formed. And the idea of the government then was to put all the Indians in that particular territory. And that went sort of well up until the point when they ran onto the Indians up in the Northern Plains, and there was a different story up there. You know, they couldn't get them to move. So that was a change in that policy. But that was the first big movement of Indians en masse. They moved them sometimes by gunpoint, and other times with the army. You know, with army escorts, of course. That's how all the southern Indians, southeastern Indians, got to be Oklahomans, you know. So they carried a whole new different experience into Oklahoma. Then the second one was the Second World War, when a lot of American Indians went into the army, both men and women. Probably about 40,000 soldiers, you know, were American Indians in the Second World War. And they located them, or they situated them right with the regular troops. They didn't segregate them, so they fought right alongside with the white soldiers in all the battles. And then during the war also, they had on the West Coast, they had a lot of, and in different parts of the country, they had war industries going on and building ships and airplanes and other things. So a lot of Indian women went out to work in the war industries during that period, particularly here on California, in the West Coast, starting down in Los Angeles all the way up to Vancouver, Washington. They had shipbuilding. That caused another big shift, And there would be kids, I noticed back at the Indian school on the reservation, they would just disappear, you know, and all of a sudden their parents moved to, you know, someplace out there. And then after the war, they came back. It was interesting because just that little piece of absence changed them to some degree. they weren't as they had, you know, they had to kind of fit back in again to the society. Very different. Then the third one, of course, was this one, you know, the urban relocation program.
So as a little girl, we lived on, before we relocated, we lived on a ranch on the reservation in a little place called Lenore, Idaho. And I remember as a little girl, you know, playing in the wheat bins, plucking chicken, seeing snake skin on the front of our porch, you know, in the morning.
We decided that we will go on relocation. We left about 3 in the morning, headed out, and it was in February 1960. Got down to Redding and it was hot. We'd been wearing sweatshirts, you know, from, it was cold. And by the time we got to Mount Shasta, we had shed the sweatshirt, wearing t-shirts, and we saw this big orange, didn't know what it was. And it was a place where they made real orange juice. We'd never had that before. That was brand new to us.
But I remember my dad took me to the bus. I got on the bus, it was a Greyhound bus, and I rode the bus from South Dakota to San Jose. And I remember getting off the bus in San Jose, and I could have kissed the ground. I was so happy to be here.
Yeah, you know, that was one of the drawbacks for relocatees, particularly Indian people, was that they didn't have work experience, you know, that allowed them to kind of figure out what work was there and what was available and how to get to it.
We had never ridden a bus before. So our guidance counselor from the Bureau of Indian Affairs had to teach us how to ride a bus. We didn't know how. They had to teach us how to use a phone, because we didn't have phones. There were no phones at home on the reservation.
But I was always lonely. I think that's the biggest obstacle that I had. I know other relocatees had their wives and children. When you come out, you're the only one, you don't know a soul in California. I mean, it was quite an experience, because you don't know anybody.
We had an urban population here in San Jose. We had one in Oakland and then one in San Francisco. So there was, in the Bay Area, there was a fairly large amount of Indians that had come in that period in the 60s. And of course, Alcatraz happened then during the 60s. And then of course we had, following that, we had Wounded Knee. So Indians sort of got on the screen at that particular, in that particular period. Individually, it was a big change for, I think, in terms of trying to, as you've seen yourself as an Indian, because most of the previous ways we were seen was not that good. You know, we didn't have much attention, and we were sort of seen as much of the, I think, the myth or the things go about Indians. And thus, we never seen ourselves really much as that is a particular ethnicity. You know, one thing you lose, obviously, is you lose your own culture in fitting in. Because, you know, 70-80% of the day, 90% of the day, you're out amongst other people, whatever aspects, work. And that changes person.
And there was a lot of, you know, different color people. There was blacks, there was Mexicans, there was myself or our family. And I knew I was Indian, and my parents, my stepdad was very friendly, and we got to know a lot of other Indian families in the area that may have come out from our same reservation, or they came out from Oklahoma, you know, from the Choctaw tribe. But I remember going to a lot of different, you know, events as a child at the San Francisco Indian Center. You know, we went to Halloween parties, little gatherings and things like that.
With the Asians, once they found out that we were Native American, then they accepted us real easy and said that some of their ways are like ours. And with the Mexicans, they'd say, well, you're like our brother, you're like our sister.
But we knew we were just different. I didn't quite know. I knew Indian, but I didn't know quite what that meant yet, other than from the history books that were taught in fourth grade, third, fourth, fifth grade. So I started learning a little bit about that So at that, below, when I was 10 and under, I had no clue what Indian meant, you know. As I got older, as a teenager, I kind of would flow into the culture of more Hispanic. I'm also half and half, so kind of went with that flow. So in our neighborhood, I lived at King and Story. There was only maybe the blacksmiths. They were the only other family that I knew of. Mm. Yeah, and I met them at the Indian Center. So that's as much as I knew. A lot of the language my grandma spoke with my mom. Only spoke it basically when me and my brother were doing bad things or whatever, out of line, and so mm-hmm. they'd speak it, and we'd look at each other, well, we're in trouble, what are they saying, you know, my grandma and my mom would speak in Indian, mm-hmm. and so after that's where it was lost. She didn't have no one to speak to anyway.
I identify with who I am. I can't be anything else but who I am. And, I've always been an Indian. And that's one of the problems, like coming, I mean, to me, where they become issues and things in California, they find out who I'm an Indian, and it starts out being okay, and all of a sudden they have all these jokes, and they can get pretty hard sometimes. And you had to overcome a lot of that, you know, like, and stuff like that. Hey, Chief, you know. So I got used to people calling me Chief. And I said, well, don't ever call me late for lunch, but, so I kind of laughed and I rolled. To be accepted, you got to go through a lot of things, especially here we are a minority within a minority. And
when they moved the Indians to the cities, he said, they thought that they would lose their Indianness, he said, and it worked just the opposite. Once they came to the cities, they became more Indian, much more aware of their Indianness, and so it just reversed on the idea of them losing their identity. One of the policies of the Bureau at the time was not to, you know, when you knew that there was someone here from your tribe that was in the city, but they wouldn't reveal their address to you. They didn't want you to get in touch with them. For what reasons, I don't know, but that was one of the things. So. But in the cities, what kind of the informal places that opened up and was the center of information was the bars. There was a couple of Indian bars. And there's one that still exists right up here on San Fernando Street. That was sort of a collect point for Indians. If you went there and talked to somebody, you could find out who was here and who wasn't here and going on. So they played that part.
The same time I drank like a fish, too. I was a young... never realized it was complicating into a form of alcoholism that later on I straightened that out. But it took me to some experiences, you know, jail, you know, drunk driving, and some things you had to go through in life to learn to get your path straight. Well, July 2nd, 1971, I quit drinking. And it's coming on 45 years.
Downtown San Jose was very active at that time. I mean, it was huge. Active people in the streets. It was a regular downtown city. That's where we met fellow Native Americans. We went to the bars, yeah, but we didn't go and get drunk every time. It was our way of socializing. So we would go and listen to music, you know, and the guys would play pool. And then at that time they had Western bars where they had Western bands. So everyone would go to the Western bands and just dance and, you know, have a good time. So that was our way of that was our families and all our friends. And I've known most of these people the whole time I've been here, the entire time.
So a bunch of them got together and started golfing. And I hadn't paid attention to this until Brian, our son, mentioned to me. He says, you know, Mom, I learned a lot more about Indians than I think if I'd been at home. What are you talking about? He says, well, when the Indian golfers would come over to the house and I'd fix dinner or lunch, whatever, for them, they'd start talking. And he said the Sioux would talk about what they did. He said the Choctaws would talk, and Paiutes, and everybody would talk about back home. And he said, I learned more about different tribes. We have some people from Alaska. We all learned, or he did. He did. Well, we did too. And he said, you know, everybody shares their stories and there's always laughing going on. And he said, it was great. He said, I like that. And he said, some of these guys, they ended up being like an uncle.
I never knew that there were California Indians. I always figured I heard of the Pawnee and the Navajo and the Apache, but I never knew that there was all these tribes like the Miwok and, you know, all the Costanoan. I never knew they existed. And they said, yeah, we've got to do something, man, you know. And but a few weeks later, they took Alcatraz over in 1963. Wasn't in 68. It's the first occupation. Well, it was 63. It was the Russell Means and his family and the Cordiers and four Lakota families jumped the fence. It wasn't until, 5 years later or 6 years later, that's when the main occupation hit. But I remember talking to Russ the following week after they got off the island there. I said, hey, man. I said, how was it out there? Because they were on the San Francisco Examiner, you see the feathers and they were jumping the fence, you know. He said, man, he said, those goddamn white boys, they could have that damn place. It's cold out there. We about froze our butts off. He said, really? He said, yeah, it was cold.
I'm one of the few people that was at Alcatraz when it was declared American Indian Land. Just by chance, I would be there and be invited to that. So it was sort of 69, I believe, just after I moved to California. So it was sort of a starting point for me to get reacquainted with my heritage. And then after that, I started selling pottery that came from my reservation as a way of getting the word out there. I had a jewelry store in Hayward, and I sold one of the few places you could find beadwork and quill work in the Bay Area. So many years back. And then started going to powwows.
We found there were powwows down here. Well, let's go. And you look around and don't I know you? We ended up, a lot of us ended up, formed a club, and it was just a get together. It ended up being more like family, like we'd made up our own tribe.
So we would go to the powwows and help them with their Indian taco stand because they needed help. I mean, they didn't have enough people, so we would go. But it was very small powwow at that time. But that was a lot of fun too. And that was another way of carrying on the traditions.
I was a very active in sports. I played basketball and football and ran track and field. And I boxed when I was a young kid and played baseball. And I tried to emulate anything, Jim Thorpe, this little kid with these dreams, you know, that one day I wanted to be a major league ball player. And that's why I was so fascinated with seeing Cal State Park. It was like a shrine, like seeing the Taj Mahal or something. Wow, you know, I'm here, you know. I pinched myself, you know. Things that kept me out here was institutions like that. I kept going. And why I stayed this long, in those early days, I just didn't want to go home. I had that drive in me that I figured when I wanted to go home, I'd think about who's around there anymore. You know, they're either going to college or they join the service or they're employed around there. And do I want to go back? So I was the first half a year while I worked out here, I would save $45, enough for a ticket back to Rapid City, South Dakota. Well, South Dakota is it's my home, but it's got a lot of prejudice too, a lot of racism yet. That, and because we're the largest minority, I don't like to use that word, but we're the largest people of color group, then our target, we got targets on her back.
I just couldn't fit back in, back at the reservation. I didn't have any good friends anymore. The ones I had were drinking. I mean, they were out, they were alcoholics. They would borrow money from me so they could drink. And I could tell they were killing themselves because they, but there's nothing to do on the reservation. There's no, nothing. You can't even go to a movie. You know, there's nothing there. So they all become depressed and they drink, and now they're doing drugs. Everyone's into drugs. But I just didn't feel good there.
And then after hanging out in California, I was getting more open-minded, changing my views about my worldview, you know, about theology and about churches and about rights of the human being. And you know, it kind of, you know, a different understanding, I guess. And that's, and this is all what never happened. It wouldn't come about with relocation when that happened. I would be probably stuck in South Dakota doing shouting hallelujahs in a church somewhere.
We've all become one nation living in California. That's what I think. We're not Navajos, Eskimos, Sioux, you know, Nez Perce. We're all, I really feel like we're all one nation. That's why when we go to the Stanford powwow, it makes you feel so good because we're all one. It doesn't matter what tribe you are. And that comes from depending on each other, you know, and forming our own little communities here and our own families.
Spent my summer in a van, St. Augustine to Michigan. Held my breath, said a prayer. All those people waiting there, I've been searching so long. It lived in me all along. Bringing us all here. It ain't lonely on the road when there's love everywhere you go. I've been searching so long. It lived in me all along. Burn me in the desert and try. Afraid
I'm a warrior, I'm a warrior, we are warriors. Burn me in the desert and drown me in the rain. Throw me to the thunder.
Who teach us of our creation and our past, so we may preserve Mother Earth for ancestors yet to come. We are the land.
This is dedicated to our relatives before us, thousands of years ago, and to the 150 million who were exterminated across the Western Hemisphere in the first 400 years' time, starting in 1492.
To those who have kept their homelands, and to the nations extinct due to mass slaughter, slavery, deportation, and disease unknown to them, and to the ones who are subjected to the same treatment today.
To the ones who survived the relocations and the ones who died along the way.
To those who carried on traditions and lived strong among their people.
To those who left their communities by force or by choice and for generations no longer know who they are.
To those who search and never find, to those that turn away the so-called non-accepted, to those that bring us together, and to those living outside keeping touch, the voice for many.
To those that make it back to live and fight the struggles of their people, to those that give up and those who do not care, to those who abuse themselves and others, and those who revive again, to those who are physically, mentally, or spiritually incapable by accident or by birth.
To those who seek strength in our spirituality and ways of life, and those who exploit it, even our own.
To those who fall for the lies and join the dividing lines that keep us fighting amongst each other.
To the outsiders who step in, good or bad, and those of us who don't know better.
To the leaders and prisoners of war, politics, crime, race, and religion, innocent or guilty.
To the young, the old, the living, and the dead,
to our brothers and sisters and all living things across Mother Earth,
and her beauty we've destroyed and denied the honor that the Creator has given each individual.
The truth that lies in our hearts, all my relations.
I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight. You can find us on Facebook at Rose City Native Radio. If you have music, events, or more, please email us at pdxnativeradio@gmail.com. I hope everybody enjoyed the show today. We are going to continue to try and highlight history and play more audio clips and interviews and things that we can find throughout this time, and just hope that we can educate. We will continue to also do updates, me and Nick, as we can. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for bearing with us during this interesting period in history. We hope that you are all staying safe. Wash your hands, wear a mask, and we look forward to talking to you again, Indian Country. If there are any historical topics or things you would be interested in, also feel free to email us at pdxnativeradio@gmail.com. Our goal here is to highlight some history that may not be well known, such as boarding schools, the Indian Relocation Act, the Indian Civilization Act, and more. So if you have a topic that you think would be interesting, please let us know and we will look into it. Again, that email is pdxnativeradio@gmail.com. And as always, Indian Country, we will see you next week. Be good, stay safe.
Listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.